Thanks everyone for coming. And tonight we're going to give a special presentation for the 3 weeks. This is the period, of course, of Avelut, in which we mourn the loss, the destruction of the temple. And generally speaking, I think what we sense and what we feel during this period of time, and where we put the emphasis, is on the loss of the Mikdash. But tonight I'd like to offer a different perspective. Maybe there's another answer to the question, what should we be feeling and why are we grieving and mourning? Tonight I'm going to base myself largely on two chidushim, two insights of two of the great giants. One is that of the Vilna Gaon, who lived about 2.5 centuries ago, and the other is that of the Chofetz Chaim, who lived just a century ago. But first, to put things into a certain perspective, we begin with the Gemara in Brachos. And that's number one on your page. Come and join us. Yeah. You can take this if you like.
And the Ores coming.
So we start with the Gemara in Brachos, and the Gemara presents a statement in the name of Ula. Ula says the following: Miyom shecharev Beit HaMikdash, from the very day that the Mikdash was destroyed, Ein lo laHakadosh Baruch Hu bolamo, all that God left for us, which is a connection between the divine worlds and our worlds, Ela arba amot shel halacha bilvad. We only have four square cubits of halacha. In other words, we no longer have the ability to serve God in the Mikdash, but what we do have is we have 4 cubits of halacha. And what I'd like to study with you tonight is this concept of 4 cubits of halacha. What's this all about, the 4 cubits? What does it mean? That's my first question for you tonight. The next question, which is based on 2 different sources, one is in Brachot, Daf Yud Gimel, the other is at the very beginning, the first mishnah in Pesachim. There's something strange that seems to be going on here. On the one hand, the Gemara says that I have to close the door. I don't know when Ora's. Oh, Ora, come in.
That's why I left it.
You know, that's the best thing is to come through that.
Well, I was just thinking, yeah. I wasn't sure you were
okay.
Here.
So that the Gemara applies a principle called Chisurei Mechsera V'Hachi Ketani, which means that very often when we look at a Mishnah, we find, to our surprise, that there were words that were omitted from the Mishnah. And the question we want to ask tonight is, why is that so? It seems so odd. If it was a problem of the editor, maybe they made a mistake when they copied it over. They didn't have printed books. They only had manuscripts. That's one thing. But the Gemara seems to assume that in many cases, this was a deliberate decision to leave out words. And we want to study that concept. The Mishnah at the beginning of Pesachim, dealing with the issue of Bedikat Chametz, tells us that when it comes to the 14th of Nisan, we have to check the house and search for chametz. And then the Mishnah goes on to discuss a case of a martef. A martef is a cellar. So you have one barrel on top of the other, one row on top of the other. And the question is, do you have to look between the barrels and do you have to go up on the top of the row? But what I want to call to your attention is that the Mishnah asks a question here. I would call it a rhetorical question. It's not looking for an answer because it offers the answer itself. But the Mishnah says, Ubame Amru. And with regard to what situation did they tell us that if you have 2 layers on the top of a cellar, then it depends on whether you have to go like Beit Shammai, Beit Sil. But the language of the Mishnah, Bame Amru, when did they say? What does it mean, when did they say, or where did they say? They never said anything. This is the original Mishnah. Can anybody here tell me who authored the Mishnah is? Would you know?
I want to make a guess, but I don't want
to. Okay, his name was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, otherwise known as Rebbe. And he came at the very end of the period of the Tanoim, which began with Hillel and Shammai. So we're talking over the course of a long period of time. And Rebbe found that it was necessary to edit the Mishnah. Now the question that we want to ask tonight is, perhaps the Mishnah in a different form existed even before Rebbe. Rebbe only abridged the Mishnah, he edited the Mishnah, organized it, formulated, but there was a Mishnah that came before Rebbe. That's what we want to see tonight. So let's just summarize a few of our questions. Number one, what does it mean that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, all that God has in this world is four cubits, four amot, shel halacha? What do these four amot symbolize? And secondly, why do we find indications in the Mishnah that there are certain parts in the Mishnah that were left out? Maybe Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, when he edited the Mishnah, he deliberately left those out, but where were they? I mean, we don't know that there were Mishnayos that came before Rebbe. We assume that the whole history and the creation of Mishnayos began with Rebbe. Here, there seems to be an indication that there was something that came before Rebbe. So let's put those two questions on the side, and we want to talk about a paragraph that we add at the end of every Amidah, every Shmon Esrei. And this paragraph is really taken from a Mishnah in Maseches Avos, which you'll see number 9 on your page. And I just want to express my gratitude to a rabbi from the Five Towns in New York. His name is Rabbi Daniel Gladstein, a young man who organized and collected all these sources and put them together. And I found it very fascinating. I don't know what he did with these sources. I'm going to try to do what I can do with these sources. But the fact that he saved me all this hassle by putting it all together is tremendous. It would take me... Usually I do it myself. If I were to do this, this would take me a month just to put together. I mean it. You can't imagine how many different sources here. You have four pages, you should have. It's an amazing amount of an anthology, a collection of sources. So we have something called Yehi Ratzon Milfanecha, in which we supplicate, we ask God that He should have the desire... She bona Beit HaMikdash b'meirav, meaning that he should rebuild the Beit HaMikdash speedily and in our time. And then we add three words, v'tein chalkenu b'toratecha, and please give us our portion in Torah. And again, as I said before, if you look at number 9, you'll see that this is borrowed and attached as an addendum to our tefillah, our Amidah, from a Mishnah in Masechet Avot. You know, the Mishnayos and Avos, they go back to tell you the whole history of the transmission of the Torah, starting from Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, and he gave it to this group of scholars, and they gave it to the next group of scholars, and so forth and so on. And then the Mishnah says, Yehi Ratzon Milfanecha, may be your will, God, our God and the God of our fathers, she bought a Beit HaMikdash, may remain that the Mikdash should be rebuilt speedily in that time. V'tein chalkeinu b'toratecha. So what's this v'tein chalkeinu b'toratecha? So before we get to the Vilna Gaon, who has a very radical new twist on this, v'tein chalkeinu, give us our portion of the Torah, I want to show you what predated the Gaon. In other words, how did they understand this prayer before the Vilna Gaon? And that's going to be the Pirush of the Eitz Yosef in the Otzer HaTfilos, which you'll see in number 6 on your page. Now, somebody joined us. If you want the text, would that be good for you? Okay, that's up to you if you want to take it or not. And we have some very comfortable couches for you to sit on. I'm just joking. It's not a 5-star hotel yet, but at least you have a place to sit. Okay. So what does the Eitz Avot say? Why are we adding this prayer that God, please give us our portion in the Torah, to this prayer for the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash? So he says the following. V'tein chalkeinu b'toratecha ratzal omar. The meaning of this is, v'im ein anachnu kida'im shetibaneh lanu Beit HaMikdash. If we're not worthy of having the Mikdash restored, I'll call upon him, but at least, to the very least, tein chalkeinu b'toratecha. give us our portion in Torah. Because you remember, we started our discussion tonight with the Gemara in Brachot that says that if we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, at least what we have is the 4 cubits of Torah. And then he adds a very important point. So what's the connection now between the fact that we defaulted, we weren't worthy of having the Mikdash rebuilt, but at least give us the Torah, because Kal Omeid Dinei Karbanot Hu Ki'ilu Hikrivam. The Halacha says that if you cannot bring a karbon of a sacrifice because there's no mikdash, so at least you learn the laws, and by studying the laws and fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the study of Torah, God accepts it as like a substitute, as if you had brought this karbon. So basically what we're saying, look, we don't have the mikdash, but at least give us the ability and the framework, the strength, the energy, the teachers that are necessary to learn all about the Beit HaMikdash and all about the specific sacrifices, the korbanot that have to be brought, and that will be a kind of substitute, a replacement for the Beit HaMikdash. As I said before, that's the way this prayer was understood before the Vilna Gaon. But what I want to show with you and share with you tonight is a much more, shall I say, radical and revolutionary approach to this prayer of Yehi Ratzon, Yibaneh Beit HaMikdash, V'tein Chalkeinu V'Torotecha. And this is that of the Vilna Gaon. Now, in order to appreciate the Vilna Gaon, we'll take a look at a verse in Mishlei, and that's in number 12. Who authored Mishlei, by the way? Who authored Mishlei? I didn't write it. I wish I wrote it. But Shlomo Melch. Excellent. Now, Shlomo Melch, in the 7th chapter of Mishlei, says something very cryptic. He says, Ki ein ha'ish bebeito, the man, so to speak, is not in his house. Halach b'derech merachok. You know, he took a long boat to China. He's very far away. And then he says, Tzrar ha'kesef lakach biado. He somehow tied up a bag, he made a bag of silver coins, and he took it in his hand. And liyom ha-keseh, meaning right now it's concealed, but eventually it'll be revealed, and we'll see the money that's inside this money bag. Yavo beito, when he returns home. Now, you know, when we learn a pasuk like this, or in this case a unit of 2 verses, and we don't understand what's going on, we know that the Torah is eternal, and it's infinite, and these are psukim that are part of the divine Torah. There must be a deeper meaning. We have to see if we can unravel the mystery here and figure out the code. There's like a code, a secret code here. So what you have here on the bottom of your page is the Bir HaGra. The Mishlei, you know, the book of Mishlei doesn't have too many commentaries, but one of the great commentaries was written by the Vilna Gaon some two centuries and change ago. And he says the following: the subject of this verse, or this unit of 2 verses, is Chachma, is the wisdom of the Torah. And the key to understand, to unlock the mystery, is the word Ha'ish, which we translate as the man. Says the Gaon, who is the man that's hinted at in this verse, in this secret code? It's God Himself. And if you go back, for example, to Shiras Hayam, you know, to Parshas Beshalach, it says Ish Milchama, God is called the man of war. So the word Ish sometimes in the Torah is used symbolically to refer to God Himself. Ki ein ha'ish beveito, and he with a capital H is not in his house. What house are we referring to here? Again, if we're breaking down the code. The Beit HaMikdash. And why is that so? Why is God departed from the Beit HaMikdash? The Beit HaMikdash charev. It was destroyed. V'akadosh Baruch Hu eino shochein b'tzion. And God's divine presence, what we call the Shekhinah, is no longer residing in Tzion. Tzion means the place where the Mikdash is in Yerushalayim. Shemisham, in that place, the Beit HaMikdash, Ba HaChachma, that's the source of all knowledge of Torah. In other words, where do we get the ability to study Torah and to understand the Torah from? And this is, again, as I said, a revolution of sorts. It doesn't come from the Torah itself. It doesn't come from the intellect. It comes from the Mikdash. It's the Mikdash itself, Tzion, which is the source of Chachma. How does the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, know such a thing, such a revolutionary idea? He quotes a verse from Yeshayahu HaNavi. And Yeshayahu HaNavi says, the Avda, as a result of the loss and the destruction of the Migdash, Chachmas Chachamav, the knowledge and the wisdom of the Torah was completely lost, the Avda. And now we can begin to plug in a new interpretation of the next verse here that we read, Tzrar HaKesef. If you remember that this man ties together into a bundle Kesef, some sort of coin, silver coins. Says the Vilna Gaon, this is Keneged HaTorah. This is a symbolic code that refers to the Torah itself. Now, how does the Gaon know that the word Tzrar, which means like a covered package, refers to the Torah? And the answer is because, again, Yeshayahu HaNavi, when he refers to the Torah, he uses a word called Tsar. Tsar Te'udah. Now, what that means is that the secrets of the Torah, the wisdom of the Torah, is covered up and hidden from access. And that's what the Gaon says, Klomer, this means to say, Shatorah Chatuma Achshav, that right now, in our present state, the Torah is Chatuma, means it's concealed. And that's what it means, Tzrar, which is a reference and allusion to the Torah, HaKesef Lokach Biyodo, that God has it in His hand. He hasn't given us the opportunity to unravel, to reveal the Torah that's now covered. And the Gaon goes as far as to say, V'af, and even im tiyageya atzmecha, even if you work and you toil and you try to understand the Torah, lo teda, you cannot know the Torah. Why? Because the Mikdash was destroyed. Im ein ha'ish b'veito, if God is not in his house, then Tzion, which is the source of Torah knowledge, is gone, and all the Torah is concealed. It's hidden behind veils and veils of covering and layers that conceal its meaning. And as a result, even if we work very hard, we'll never really pierce and understand the Torah itself. And in order to prove this, the Gaon quotes a verse from Eicha. As you know, Eicha was authored by Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and it's a foretelling of the destruction of the temple. So if you want to see this pasuk in its full-fledged and larger form, you'll take a look at number 10, and this is in the second chapter of Eicha, and it says there, Tavu ba'aretz sha'areha, the gates of Jerusalem have been submerged under the water, and all the brichim, all that, you know, those sturdy parts of the Migdash that keep the Migdash going are all Ibei, Veshiba, they're all lost and broken. In other words, the Migdash is now in ruins. And now he turns to the Jewish nation. What's the status and the situation that could describe the Jewish nation as a result of the destruction of the temple? Malkah, its king, Visarel, and its officers, Bagoyim, have been sent into the diaspora, spread around the world. And then, here's the key of keys, Ein Torah. As a result of the fact that Zion has been destroyed, the Mikdash is gone, there's no Torah. And that's what the Gaon says over here, that as a result of the fact that God left the Migdash, Ein Ha'ish Beveito, he's no longer home in his house, therefore, Tzrar HaKesef Lachak Biyado. And now we're living in a world of Kesa. Kesa means it's covered over. But, if you look at the last two words in this verse, it says, Yavo Beito. What does that mean? Here's a message of optimism. What does it mean, Yavo Beito? He will return to his house. So we know that that there's a prophecy which is written all over in all the Nevi'im that God will return to the Beit HaMikdash and there will be a rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. And right now, in the present state where the Mikdash is gone and it's destroyed, we have no Torah. There's no opportunity to really understand Torah. And again, if I said that to you on my own, you would throw me out and throw rotten tomatoes at me, and you'd be right for doing so. That's a chutzpah to say something like that, that there's no Torah, but the Gaon says it. He says, Achshav, now, HaTorah, Chasuma, it's completely covered. It's like a sealed book. And afim tiyagea atzmcha lo teda. And that's what the pasuk means in Eicha, that has resulted in the destruction of the Mikdash, ein Torah, says the Gaon, because the original source of Torah and all its knowledge is the Beit HaMikdash. If this be the case, now we can shed a whole new light on this supplication that we add three times a day to our, at the end of the Amidah, the end of the Shemoneh Esrei. And that you'll see in number 11, which is also a quote of the Gaon. The Gaon says the following. He says that since in Pirkei Avot we speak about Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, we speak about the transmission of the Torah from Moshe who received the Torah at Har Sinai to the Zgenim and so forth and so on. But Ein Torah below Beit HaMikdash. In the absence of the Mikdash, there is no Torah. And that's the pasuk again, Malka v'sareh b'goyim ein Torah. And therefore he says, Yiratzon shibaneh Beit HaMikdash, b'mheirav yameinu, then when God will rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, then tein chalkeinu b'Torah techa, then we'll have Torah. U'mola ha'aretz deyat Hashem, and that's what Yeshayahu, Isaiah, Novi, predicts, that at the point in which the Mikdash will be restored, the Mashiach will come, the whole earth will be flooded, so to speak, will be filled with Deah, with knowledge. Why? Because now knowledge is completely closed. It's concealed behind layers and layers that conceal it. And then when the Mikdash will be rebuilt, then the Torah will be restored. So that's what it means when we say V'tein chalkeinu v'Torah techa. Again, in contrast to what we saw in the name of the pre-Eitz Yosef, who says that God, look, if you're not going to rebuild the Mikdash because we don't deserve that, at least give us the Torah. That's not the pshat, says the Gaon. The Gaon is learning that in the present situation that we don't have the Mikdash, we don't have Torah. Give us the Mikdash and then we will have Torah.
So what is it that we have now?
What we have now is the Torah that's concealed, that's very difficult to understand. You know, somebody came over to me before and asked me about the meaning of certain verses in this week's parsha. You know, I don't know who that might have been, but I mean, we really don't have that knowledge. You know, we try and we peel off layers and layers, but we haven't yet gotten to it. Okay. Now, this insight of the Gaon is going to lead us to the Chofetz Chaim, but I want to leave that for the end. That's sort of like the punchline of the, that's the, you know, that's what we want to get to. But if you'll take a look on the second page here, number 2, you'll see something amazing. This is number 14. Now, back in the day in France, this is at the time of the Rishonim, so we're going back probably about 7-8 centuries ago. There was a great giant who was called Rabbi Shimshon. Okay? He came from a city called Cologne, I think it's called in France. Did I get that right? Anyway. Yeah. And he wrote a book called Sefer Akritut. Again, we're going back into a time machine some 7-8 centuries ago. And in this book, he tries to trace the transmission of the Torah beyond what we see in Avot. You know, Avot stops at a certain point. What happens after that? So he says the following. Atchil lefaresh zman amidat ha-tana'im. Let's start with the period of the Tanoim. Who were the first Tanoim, historically, who received the Torah in that transmission of Torah? It was Hillel and Shammai. They were called the Makablim. Makablim means they were the recipients of Torah. And then they transmitted Torah over the course of centuries to the next group of great scholars who are called the Tanoim, and they received the Torah through Hillel and Shammai. Now, what's the difference between that first generation of Hillel and Shammai and all the decades and centuries that came after them? He says the following. Hamakablim mehem, those who received the Torah from Hillel and Shammai, Ikar Anshei HaMishnah, they can be called or defined as Anshei HaMishnah. So the period after Hillel and Shammai is called the period of the men of the Mishnah. And he says the following, Ki Ad Yemehem, up until the time of the original Mekablim, who were the first Mekablim that received the Torah? Anybody? Are you following me? No? Hillel and Shammai? Oh, again, I'm not sure where I'm losing you. Can we all get on the same page here for a minute? Because otherwise I get very nervous. The first generation of recipients of Torah during the period of the Tanoim were Hillel and Shammai. How many people in the room followed that? Hillel and Shammai. Okay, we got that?
Yeah.
Okay. Then following Hillel and Shammai, who transmitted the Torah to the Anshei HaMishnah, to those who are called the period of the Mishnah, which again takes us a long period of time, which culminates with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, says the Sefer HaKrisos, Ki Ad Yemeim, up until, but not beyond, the period of Hillel and Shammai, Hayu Shesh Meod Sidrei Mishnah. The Mishnah was made up of 600 sets. I mentioned it on Shabbat.
You said until Shabbat.
Okay, so this is going to be an issue, but right now I'm going to suggest the following interpretation. We'll see later on. I'm going to try to fine tune it, but up until, but not beyond. In other words, if you can isolate that frame, which is called the period of Hillel and Shammai, ask yourself how many Mishnayot, how many Sidrei Mishnah were there, and the answer is 600. We only have six. Because the Yemeim, from the time of Hillel and Shammai, Nismata Torah, the Torah started getting lower and lower, or less and less, more restricted and more limited. Mipnei Galut, because of the experience of getting expelled and exiled from Yerushalayim, from Tzion, from the Migdash. V'lo Tiknu, what were we left with at the time of Rebbe, who established the final edition of the Mishnah, Ki'im, nothing more than Shishas Darimehem. So, my friends, in simple mathematical terms, what percentage of the Mishnah do we have today?
600.
What percentage is that? Do you have to be you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar for that. Again, we started with 600, we're left with 6. What?
We're 6%. What? No, 10%.
Less.
10%, correct? Because if you multiply 6 by 10, no, then you get 60.
Oh, yeah.
No,
right.
Less.
So it's less than 10%,
yeah.
Correct? It's 6 over 600, which is the same ratio as 1 to 100. It's 1%. Could you imagine? We're left with 1% of the Mishnah. And this idea repeats itself in many, many different books that were written that codify, or shall I say, standardize the history of the transmission of the Torah. For example, there's a famous book called Seder Tanoim V'Amoroim, and he says, Miyamos Moshe, from the time Moshe Rabbeinu V'ad Hillel HaZaken, the original elderly Hillel, Shesh Meot Sidrei Mishnah Hava, there were 600 Sdarim of Mishnah. But from the time of Hillel and onwards, Mihil V'elech, Hani Ha'olam, the world became poor, poverty-stricken, V'cholsha Sara Shel Torah, and the power of Torah got weaker, V'lo Tiknu Mihil V'Shamai, and after Hillel V'Shamai's period of time, they were only able to stretch it out to Shisha Sdarim, and that's the Anshei HaMishnah. And there's a long period of time here of hundreds of years, and at the end of the period of Mishnah, we're left with 6 Sidrei Mishnah. Now, this is a fascinating piece of history to say that at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, when he received the Torah, he got 600 Sidrei Mishnah. But where is it based upon? You know, you have to have a source for this. Okay, the Sefer HaKrisos, but where did Reb Shimshon of Cologne, where did he get it from? And the answer is the Gemara in Chagiga, which here you'll see as the fourth source on your page. And the Gemara talks about Balei HaMishnah. And it says over there, Shesh Meod Sidrei Mishnah. Rashi says, Shesh Meod Sidrei Mishnah Hayu B'Yemeihem. At the time of the original Mekablei HaTorah, who received it in a direct link from Moshe Rabbeinu, there were 600 Sidrei Mishnah, which, as we said, is 100 times what we have today. Pretty sad situation, but it makes sense according to the Gaon, who says that we hardly have Torah today. Now, on the Gemara, there's a super commentary, which is called the Ben Ish Chai. If I'm not mistaken, the Ben Ish Chai was the chief rabbi of Iraq, if I got that right. Anyway, he wrote a commentary on Agadita on those philosophical chapters or sections of the Talmud called Ben Yehoyada. And he writes the following there in Chagiga. He says, "Vehine bi'elu ha'sheish me'od sidrei mishnah sheheim toras emes." Now watch this. He says that the Torah is truth, and the opposite of truth in Lashon Kodesh in the Hebrew tongue is sheker. Now take a look at the word sheker and calculate its value. It's shin, which is 300, kuf is 100, resh is 200, is altogether you have 600. So there are 600 sidre mishnah which represent emes, the opposite of which is sheker. Then he writes that if you take a look, I should have brought a show and tell here, of the tefillin shel rosh, you'll see that on two sides of the tefillin shel rosh there's a shin. Now, if you take one shin and add it to another shin, you get the word sheish, which means six. And he says that a shin is 300, another shin is 300, so the numerical value of the word sheish, if you put together the two shins, is 600. And he says that that number is not coincidental. It reflects the 600 sidre sets of Mishnah. And he says that therefore, since the 600 Sidre Mishnah, which represents the Torah, is on the top of the tefillin, now we understand when the Pasuk says in Dvar Varo kol Amei Aretz ki Shem Hashem Nikra Alech V'Yaro Mimeka, that the nations of the world will see that the name of God is on you, and they'll fear you. Om Rabbi Eliezer, the Gemara quotes in Masechta Menachos the statement of Rabbi Eliezer, Elu Tefillin Shel Rosh. What will they see? The nations of the world on the top of your forehead, and they will fear, they will have awe of the Jewish nation. Tefillin Shel Rosh, the tefillin that we wore on the head. Because that tefillin that we wear on the head represents symbolically the entire corpus of Mishnah, Sheish, which means 600. Now, when you read the Shin Shin, not looking at it written, you know, as a word on a page, which is Shin and Shin, but the spoken word is Sheish. What is Sheish? Six. Correct? So again, there's a fundamental difference here between the numerical value of the word if you calculate its as a written word, sheish, it means shin and shin, which is 600, 300 times 2, as opposed to the word as it's spoken, which is sheish, then it means 6. And he says the following, that in the original Torah, it was the numerical value of the spoken word sheish, not the word itself and its meaning, because that's only 6, but the numerical value of the spoken word, which is shin shin, and the numerical value of sheish is 600. But the Atta today, all we're left with is the kriya means the way we read it, and when we read it without calculating the letters, it's sheish, which means 6. So this is fascinating, and the Ben Ish Chai goes on to say that that's what it means in the Tochacha, which is at the end of Vayikra. It says there, "Valachta, valachtem imi bekeri, af ani elech imachem bechamas keri." And the word keri here means kriya, means reading. So God says that as a result of the fact that I will expel you, exile you from the land, in this very harsh tochacha, this castigation of the Jewish people, you will be spread throughout the world. You will not have the Beit HaMikdash. And then the word sheish is kriya, the way you read it. The way you read it, it means 6. And all you'll be left with in the Golos is 6 out of the original 600. Utchila hayu sheish meot v'ato, but now nisharu be'achadim, we're left with a small percentage. Tchila hayu kibinyan tzidkus. Right, another word for the Torah is justice, which is called tzidkut. Now, if you calculate the numerical value of the word tzidkut, you guessed it, it's 600. Right, because the kuf and the tuf add up to 500, and the tzadi, which is 90, together with the dollar, which is 4, and the vav, which is 6, add up to another 100, so 500 and another 100 is 600. But kasher nitmatu tzedakot shavahem, when we were no longer just people, we weren't dedicated to righteousness, nismatu gam hasdarim shel mishnah, that number 600 of tzidkus, of 600 sidre mishnah, was diminished, and we're left with 6 instead of 600. V'lachein amar b'yechezkel, Yechezkel tells us in the 16th chapter, v'echavshcha b'sheish v'akasecha, I will grab onto the sheish is 600, v'akasecha, and I will cover it up. And when we cover up the 600, we're left with the word 6, sheish. Ki li olam heim sheish, originally it was 600, ach tchila b'mispar, because the numerical value originally was 600, v'ach kach b'mashmos ha-kriya, the way we read it, and we only read it as 6. And now I want to take a look at the Shalah in two different paragraphs. The Shalah was the Shnei Luchot HaBrit. His name was Rav Horowitz. He lived about 3 centuries ago. And he writes that Kodem Rebbe, before Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, Hayu Tuf Reish Sidre Mishnah. Now Tuf is 400. Reish is 200. Is 600. Ubar Rebbe Vekitzer. Rebbe had to abridge the Torah. We no longer could study such a massive amount of Torah. We didn't have the ability to do so. And he says, now we understand the Mishnah at the beginning of Psachim, which you recall on your first page was, I think, source number 3, where the Mishnah says, Ubameh Amru. And where did they speak about the seller? What does that mean, where did they speak about the seller? Lo Matsinu, he says, and we're on the top of the left column, B'mishnah didan, anywhere in that Mishnah we don't see anything about a seller. Shtei.
You did Matsef before, didn't you?
What did he say?
He said Matsef, that's a seller.
Right, so the Mishnah says, Ubameh Amru Shtei Shirot B'Matef, and in what case did they say that you have to check 2 layers in the seller? What do you mean, did they say? Where did they say it? So we looked throughout the Mishnah, we didn't find any Mishnah. The answer is, because that Mishnah was one of the 600 original Mishnayos, Sidrei Mishnayos, which we no longer have. So Rebbe, when he gave us the very abridged form of the Mishnah, he was aware of the existence of an earlier Mishnah, and he alludes to it by saying, Ubameh Amru. And the Shalah in number 21 says that there are a number of words in the Mishnah that don't seem, or I should say letters in the Mishnah, that don't seem on the surface to make sense. For example, we find a Vav. And the word Vav, which usually means, in English we translate as and, doesn't fit into place. For example, it says in the Mishnah, in Masechta Yevamos, Cholatz ve'asa maimar. Okay, I won't go into detail here about all the, because that would take us another half hour, but suffice it to say that the word ve'as, or the vav of ve'as, is totally out of place, because the Mishnah is not referring to A plus B, A and B, but rather A or B. And he says, yesh harbe kayot, there are many times where you'll find this, where the vav is used as or, not as and. Okay? Then he goes on to say that the letter Shin also very often is out of place. Let's see if we can give an example. Oh yeah, he has a Mishnah in Masechta Ksubos. It says there, Perek Yishe Shenis Amala V'im Yesh Lahem Edim Afilu Eved Afilu Shivcha Rei Elu Nemonim She'ein Adam Neman al Yidei Atzmo. Now, what that means is that a person can't testify about himself. Let's say that he's a Kohen or other kinds of testimony. He needs objective testimony from the outside. Again, I'm not going into all the detail. But then it says She'ein Adam Neman al Yidei Atzmo. And what it really means is Ve'ein Adam Neman al Yidei Atzmo. It's the Shin, which means because of, is completely out of place over here. Well, for example, the Mishnah in Beitza, it says She'efer Kira Muchanhu, and it should say, it shouldn't mention She'efer Kira, because Efer Kira, which is a kind of ashes that are used to cover up the blood, that's not even mentioned anywhere in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says Efer Mandakar Shmei? I mean, why does the Mishnah mention that there was Efer Kira? We never even said a word about Efer Kira. In any event, in the next paragraph, he presents the following thesis, that this word, this letter Shin, is really totally out of place, but it appeared in its place in the original 600 Sidre Mishnah. And when Rabbi Yehuda Anasi edited the Mishnah, he tried as much as he could to maintain the integrity of the words and the letters as they were formulated in the original Mishnayos. And here we get to a Sefer HaPliya. He was a rabbi in the city of Prague some 300 years ago. And he writes, this is number 22, he says, V'ata odiach adover gadol. Now I want to reveal to you a very important thing. Shemiyemot Moshe v'ad Hillel hazaken, from the time of Moshe until Hillel hayutaf reish, there were 600 Sidre Mishnah. And in the next line, he calculates how you get the number 600. Why is there 600? And he says that basically every single set of Mishnah is influenced by six different directions. Ksavot, six different. It's, how do you call it? A hexagon? Is that how you say six? Six sides? I don't know. Anyway, each one of those six has 10 different elements within it, kol miyud. So if you take the 10 and you multiply it by 6 and then you multiply it again by 10, you're left with 600. Okay, that's a whole calculation. He says, Nasna HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, God gave Moshe the written Torah and he gave Moshe the oral Torah. And that oral Torah, which was transmitted by God himself to Moshe during the 40 days that he was on the mountain, had no less or no more than 600 Sidre Mishnayos. And during the 40-year period of the Jews in the desert, he says, the Sarei Alofim, Sarei Meos, meaning those Anshei Chayil, you remember in Parshas Yisro that Moshe had to appoint judges over the people, you know, for every 1,000 people, there was what's called the Sarei Alofim, you know, he was a great scholar for 1,000 people. And those cases that came in front of all these judges were judged by the 600 Mishnayos, meaning the Torah Shebaal Peh, that would give them the ability and the rules of, you know, that was the legal text, you know, by which they could determine what the law is and how to hand out a verdict. That was determined by the 600 Sidre Mishnah. Now you can turn to page 3. And he says the following. He says that at the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah down. And during this 40 period of time, before Moshe came close to his death, it was v'shavtu es ha'am b'chol eis. These officers, these judges would adjudicate all different scenarios. And that was Torah Shebaal Peh, that was the oral Torah. And that was comprised of 600 Sidre Mishnah. And that's what they used to judge the people of Israel. And at the time that Moshe Rabbeinu died, the judges committed these 600 Mishnayos to writing, probably in some sort of short form. And then this was the Torah that was made up of not just the written Torah, but the 600 Sidre Mishnayos of the oral law that was handed down from one generation to the other, until we got to the generation of Hillel and Shammai. And then from the time of Hillel and Shammai and on, the world became very weak and very poor, and there was no ability to study the entire Torah of 600 Sidre Mishnah. And therefore, at that point, a process began in which the Mishnayos were condensed to a very small, a relatively small form. And he says towards the end of this presentation, "B'chol makom shekitzer Rabbeinu HaKadosh es Loshon HaMishnah," whenever Rebbe would shorten and abridge the language of the Mishnah from the original 600 Sidre Mishnah, "V'lo heviyom," and he didn't quote the Mishnah verbatim, is Chozrin Hamoroi V'Omrim Chisurei Mechzerov Ahachi K'tani. You remember back on page 1, we had on number 2, Chisurei Mechzerov Ahachi K'tani, that the Gemara says that there are words left out of the Mishnah. Now, why were those words left out of the Mishnah? The answer is because we don't have the original Mishnah. Rebbe abridged the original Mishnah from 600 down to 6 by 100%. And therefore, what we have is an attempt on the part of the Talmud to try to figure out which words from the original Mishnah were omitted by Rebbe. And this concept we'll see over and over again. For example, you could see it in the Beit Yosef, that's Rav Yosef Karo, who has authored a book called the Klolei HaGemara, the Principles of the Gemara, and he writes, and this you'll see in number 23, that in the name of the Sefer HaKritut, which we saw before Rabbi Shimshon, that before Rebbe there were 600 Sidre Mishnah, and Rebbe came along, V'kitzer, and he abridged them. And that's why the Mishnah tells us in Psachim that Bameh Amru, in what case did they say in the original Mishnah, Shtei Shuros B'Martef? There's another Sefer by Rabbi Shlomo El-Ghazi, also one of the great Sephardic scholars, and that's the Yovin Shmua number 24, and he says that the Breitot, you know that the Gemara is made up primarily of Breitot, the Breita is that which was left out of the Mishnah. He says that means it was left out in the original 600 Sidre Mishnah. And that's why whenever the Gemara quotes a Breita, it opens up with Tuf Resh, which is abbreviated form for Tanu Rabbanan. And he says Tuf Resh is 4 and 2 is 600. Then he goes on to say, based on the Yerushalmi, again I'm not going into all the details here, that the Yerushalmi makes a sharp distinction between what's called a Tosefta and what's called a Breita. And what's the difference between a Tosefta and a Breita? L'chora, they're all the same. So the Yovin Shmua suggests that a Tosefta is a new addition, meaning it's a halacha that was never formulated before, whereas the Breita is just an omission from the original Mishnah, as we reduce the Mishnahs from 600 down to 6. So there's a fundamental difference between Tosefta and Breita, and that he bases himself on Yerushalmi.
How do you spell Breita? How do you spell that?
How do you spell it?
Yeah.
A Breita is spelled Bet Resh Yud Yud Tav Aleph. Breita means that which was left on the outside.
Yeah,
so Rebbe, when he cut down the Mishnayis, as we said, he whittled it down from 600 to 6, he left out certain things, and those things are Breitot, meaning they're left outside.
Very interesting.
Everything is fascinating here, how everything fits into place over here. If you take a look at number 26, he quotes another early source, which is called the Machzor Vitri. That's even before Rashi. And in the manuscript form of the Machzor Vitri, it says the following: Miyamot, do you see that? It's on line 3 on number 26. Miyamot Moshe ad Hillel she'olah mi-Bavel. Hill came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Hayu Sheshmeos, right? Shin Mem is Sheshmeot. That's 600 Sidre Mishnah. K'moshe Nosan HaKadosh Baruch Lemoshe B'Sinai. Umi Hillel V'Elech Nismai Ta'olam. The world got diminished, it got, reduced. V'cholsha kvoda shel Torah, and the original majesty of the Torah became weaker. Now look at the next line here, this is another one. He says, V'lo tiknu Hillel V'shamai Elo Shesh Sdarim. Not the way we saw until now, that it was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi at the end of this period of time who abridged the Mishnahs from 600 down to 6, but rather it was already at the time of Hill V'Shamai, that was your question before, that already this process had taken place. So in other words, when the period of time of the Anshei Mishnah from Hill and Shammai all the way to Rebbe, the total number of Sidre Mishnahs during that period of time was only 6. And therefore the critical turning point, according to the Machzor Vitri, was Hill and Shammai. And in the next paragraph, he tries to work out some reconciliation between the Machzor Vitri and the Sefer HaKrisus. And he wants to say that if you go back to the Sefer HaKrisus, which was the first source on your page 2, he says there that Miyamehem Nismata Torah on the third line. And Miyamehem means from the time of Hillel and Shammai, the Torah was already getting reduced. Mipnei Agolus, because we were sent out of the Beis HaMikdash, out of Eretz Yisrael. So it means that I wouldn't say that according to the Sefer Krisus Hill and Shammai already reduced the Torah from 600 to 6, but what I would suggest is that already at the time of Hill and Shammai, at the beginning of this period of the Makablim, of the Anshei HaMishnah, there already was a process of reduction, so that we can really make it such the gap between the Matzah Vitri and the Sefer Krisus is not that wide, although the Matzah Vitri seems to assume that Hill and Shammai already had reduced it to six Mishnayos, six Sidrei Mishnah. But what I would say is that Rebbe came at the end of this long process that began with Hill and Shammai. Anyway, that's a whole long discussion over here. Now take a look on page 4, and this is going to really be wild. According to the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a compilation of Midrashim, there was somebody who was really great. I think he predates Noach. He lived for a long time. His name was Mesushelach. And there was someone named Katzenelenbogen, and he was called the Ramami Pano. He was an Italian Jew who lived a couple of centuries ago, and he wrote a book called Gilgulei Neshamos. Now, how do you say in English Gilgulim? I forgot the word. The resurrection of the soul, what's it called? No. Incarnation, right? So what's it called? The incarnation of souls. So he claims that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who authored the Mishnah, was a reincarnation of Mesushelach. And according to the Medrash, Mesushelach, who was a great tzaddik, and the Medrash describes after he died how the Malachi Asharis were crying up in the heavens, and when they spoke the eulogies and the praises of Mesushelach after he died, they said, "Hu ayashone chameo sidrei mishnah." He had 900 sidrei mishnah. That's what it says over here. That's in number 29. In any event, the punchline of everything I want to discuss with you today is here at number 30, and that's the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim was once together in an inn with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And the question came before them when Chazal say that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi organized six Sidrei Mishnah, which is only a small portion of all the Mishnahs that came before him. And he quotes Rav Haigon, who says that from the time Moshe Rabbeinu until Hillel HaZaken there were 600 Sidrei Mishnah. So the question that was raised is, Me'ata ma nishne b'kol osa mishnayis harabo shalo sidei Rabbeinu HaKadosh Mishnasenu. What is the destiny, so to speak? What happens with all those hundreds and hundreds of mishnayis, like 594 mishnayis, sidrei mishnah, that were lost? So the Chofetz Chaim answered this question, and he said the following. He says that kol mashin itba'er v'nitparesh al yidei chachmei ha-Talmud, meaning after the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi comes the chachmei ha-Talmud, those are what we call the Amoraim, and after the Amoraim come the Gaonim, and after the Gaonim come the Rishonim, and then come the Achronim, and then come the Achron Shebachronim. He says this entire period of about 1700 years, kol zeh, all the explanations and all the analyses, chosef lefanenu, they expose in front of us as kol mashen nishne kodem chira mishnah. All that was lost before Rebbe codified the Mishnah, as we said before, the 594 Sidrei Mishnah, did I get that math right? All that is being restored by the giants, the chachamim of all the generations, v'amalam harav, u'b'giyosam asmida, with all their efforts and their sweat and toil, hitzlichu lahachzir atorah liyoshna, they bring back that great jewel, that crown that we lost. Hem chokrim v'dorshim. Donum in a klal, a prat in a prat la klal. They look at the specifics, they look at the rules, they analyze, and with their analysis and their nituach of every single section of the Torah, Banu v'sasru, sasru banu. They build, they destroy. You know, they have ideas and possibilities. Then they throw that out and they come up with a better idea. Adshin is gala, until at the end of time there will be a revelation of nischaver alahem akol. All the pieces of the puzzle of the Torah will fit into place. V'kach, and as a result, huchzara haveda, and the lost Torah will be restored. And again, I would claim, if we go back to page 1, the pasuk in Mishlei number 12, that's what it means, Yavo Beso, that God will return to his house. So basically, during this period of time, when we say, Yiratzon Fnei Avinu Shebashamayim, Sheibana Beis HaMikdash B'mehera V'yameinu, Yiratzon, may it be his will that the Mikdash be restored, we're asking for the restoration of the Torah. But now we're involved for centuries and centuries, millennia, in a process of restoring the Torah that was lost. And here I want to share with you something fascinating. You remember that the first question that we asked when we started tonight, well, number one on page one, was what does it mean four amos? That after the Mikdash was destroyed, all that we're left with is the four cubits of Torah. What's the significance of four cubits of Torah? So in order to appreciate that, we have to look at a pasuk in Zechariah Hanavi, which is number 32. Vayomer Eli, the Malach turns to Zechariah, who's having a prophetic vision. Ma Toro, what do you see in front of you? Va'omar, and Zechariah responds, and Eroa, I see a Megillah scroll. Afa means it's doubled over. You know, it's folded over. Arka, its length is Esrim Amo, is 20 cubits. V'rachva, and its width is Eser Ba'ama, is 10 cubits. And the Gemara in Mesechta Erevin on Daf Chaf Aleph, which is your number 33, says something amazing. What was this Megillah, what was this scroll that was so long that it was 20 Amma by 10 Amma? And the Gemara answers that this was the Megillah of Torah Shebal Peh, of the oral law. In other words, we know that there's two Torahs, there's the written law and the oral law. Well, what was the size of the oral law? It was the size of a Megillah, of a scroll that was folded over Esrim Ba'ama in its Orech, and its Rochav, its width, was Esa, was 10 Amma. So on this, the Gaon makes the following comment. And he says the following. And that you'll see in number 34 on your page. He says that David Amel says in Tehillim, Rachva mitzvosech ma'ot. Your mitzvos Hashem are very wide, very broad. Meaning, they're not just limited to the Torah Shebichsav. The written Torah has the mitzvos, but only in its, you know, reduced, condensed form. But there's much more to it, and that's called Torah Shebal Peh. And the pasuk says, what did Zechariah report that he saw? He saw a Megillah Afa, which means a folded up Megillah, and Arka Esrim Biyama Varofa Eser Biyama. And Rashi says that this Megillah, what was written on this scroll, Haisak Suva Chatorish Valpeh, the oral law. And he says the following, that the word afa means double, meaning what you're seeing here is half. So if you want to double the square footage or the square amma-age of something that's 20 by 10, then it becomes 20 by 20. Now if you have something that's 20 by 20, he says it's 20 ammas on 20 ammas, because again, Zechariah only saw half of the Megillah, the other half was underneath, and when you stretch it out, then the Rochav goes from 10 Amma to 20 Amma, and that doubles the entire square area. And what you do is when you have 20 Amma by 20 Amma, what are you left with? 400, because 20 by times 20 is 400. And he says that originally the Torah Shebal Peh was 600 Sidrei Mishnah. What we have today is only 6 Sidrei Mishnah, which is 1%. He says, what's 1%? Of 400 Amos. 4 Amos. Do you follow that? Because 4 times 100 is 400. So he says that if the Torah Shebal Peh, its original form, was 400 Amos square, then now that the Mikdash is destroyed and the source of Chachma is lost, what we're left with is only 1%, which means 6 six Sidrei Mishnah instead of 600, and he says that 1% of a square area of 400 amos is 4 amos. V'zeu sha'amru, and that's what the Gemara means when they says that now that the Mikdash is gone, ein lo la'kadosh baruch hu ba'olamo ela arba amos shalalocha, all that we're left with is these 4 cubits, which represent 1%. But the good news is that even if we're left with 1%, and the Pasuk in Eicha says ein Torah, we have almost nothing, but nevertheless we have a great deal, because the Chafetz Chaim says that since the time of the Talmud and the Chachmei HaGaonim V'Rishonim V'Achronim Ad Achron Shebachronim, we're involved in a tremendous, glorious, majestic process of replacing and revealing the Torah that was lost, and the ultimate will be, Amir Tzeh Hashem, after the Mikdash is rebuilt, then we'll have Tzion, we'll have the source of Chachma, we'll Hu Yashiv Lebeiso, He, Almighty God, will return to His house, and then when the source of Torah is very powerful, Mola Haaretz, Deav Hashem, will have an ability and access to all 600 Sidrei Mishnah, and therefore we want to end our Shia tonight that during these days, Bein HaMetzarim, of the 3 weeks culminating with Tisha B'Av, what we should think about is, number one, of course, the destruction of the Mikdash, but moreover, the fact that the Mikdash is lost means that we don't have the Torah as it was in its original form, and we're asking Hashem, Yehi Ratzon Milfanecha, Sheibana Beis HaMikdash B'Meir V'Yomenu, and then, as a result, the same Chalkeinu B'Sar Sech will be able to have the Torah, Kei Ratzon. Again, thank you all for coming tonight. Yes, please.
How did you make the
You want to know about the math here?